All right. Select Board Special Meeting Agenda, April 2nd, 2026, 9 a.m. Now, so the meeting is being recorded. Call meeting to order. Any deletions or anything? Just good to go?
Yep.
Okay. Annual Vermont Trans Meeting with Logan Perrin.
I'll go through this. So I'll take some notes just in case there's something I can't answer today or need more follow-up or discussion. I'll take some notes and I can follow up at a later time when I get what's needed. And then I did make copies of everything. Aaron, I'm sure you have most of this. I just always print out a packet for everyone. So this is just the letter that gets sent out in the February 1st email that did come out on the 30th this year since the first landed on a Sunday. So that's just kind of the welcome to the information letter that discusses, you know, has a little blurb about each of the things we're going to go over today. And then a blank copy of the grant program. So the Town Highway Class 2 and Structures grants. The grants have changed a hair for structures. So as you know, previously for Class 2 related grants, it is the eligibility or the kind of order of awarding the grants is based off of dollars per mile for your Class 2 roadways, so how much you've received in the Class 2 grant program divided by the number of Class 2 miles you have in the town. And that ranks all the towns, so towns who have had less money per mile are higher on the list to be awarded, and then towns that have more are farther down the list. Kirby Lands, you've had $217,796 over the grant life, or over the grant program life, divided by 4.01 miles. That puts you at $54,313 per mile, and that sticks you kind of in the top 10. It looks like you're sitting at fifth place in the list. So that is a really good spot. So if you were to apply for a Class 2 roadway grant in the next year or two, then most likely you would see one. Mm-hmm. I'm usually just shy of $1 million in that program. So awarding five grants, if everyone asked for the full amount, you would probably see less than what you asked for. If any of them are asking for less than the full amount, then you'd probably get the full amount if you're looking to try to capture that full $200,000 match.
So when I saw this come in, is this the grant and aid?
No, this is separate. So those are the municipal assistance grants. Grants and aid and better roads go through Municipal Assistance Bureau. So that would be...
Because I had a note that this was due on April 15th.
So that is this one, yep.
Okay.
So this is due April 15th.
Okay, and what do I do for this one?
Yeah, so you just fill out that. So the Class 2 Roadway Grant is a grant that can be used on the Class 2 roads as far as resurfacing, reclaiming...
But
you know,
I don't have to
work.
Say specifically road segments or anything like that?
Nope. So all you have to do is call out which road. So that kind of that middle section I'll show you right there. So you're basically just calling out the town highway number, the name of the road. Class of road would be 2. You can ignore the bridge and culvert section just because that's for the structures part of it, retaining wall. And then just like latitude and longitude, so just kind of the middle point of the road or start or end, you just pick a point
along.
Okay, and
you're referring to just the Class 2.
Class 2, yep.
Could I use this for a structure?
Yep, and I'll tell you kind of where you sit for that one as well.
Okay.
I'm just saying you're sitting really well to receive a Class 2 this year or next year, and you're not going to go down the list, so if you don't want to submit one for this year, you'd be... looking just as good.
Yeah, I don't think we have any twos, Class 2s. I think ours are all, the Class 2 is a state road. Okay.
No, you should have a class, you have 4 miles of Class 2 road, so it would be your,
it'd be this road.
This road is Class 2.
Ridge Road.
Okay. So Class 2 are the roads that go from because that's the continuum of Red Village, right?
Yeah.
Ridge Road goes up.
Yeah.
So Class 2 is a road that goes like place to place.
Okay.
If you were ever to want to upgrade a road from a Class 3 to a 2, I almost think that this one could qualify. This goes to Granby eventually.
Yeah, it goes right into Victory Concord. Yeah.
So, and does it conclude kind of like at the town line?
This is Town Hall Road, and that's Kirby Mountain Road. Kirby Mountain Road would take you from Concord to Kirby.
So Kirby Mountain Road would be Probably the one that could also qualify to be a Class 2. Just because Class 2, there's a whole form. If the town decides to do a 3 to a 4 or a 4 to a 3, it's a lot simpler of a process. A 3 to a 2, you have to have you have to put like an ADT count. So you would talk to Doug Morton, your RPC, mm-hmm. and he would come out and do a traffic count because you'd have to have a certain – it's like a rating score. Mm-hmm. that the state will go over and review. So the town kind of do the rating score, submit it, and then the state kind of does the rating score themselves also, see if it matches the town's rating score, if it goes up or down, and mm-hmm. discuss it. So different points for different level of cars that go by each day. So like 0 to 500 is a point, and then 500 to 1,500 is 2 points, or however exactly it works. I have to look at the thing to reference mm-hmm. perfectly. It's in the orange book. And then like if it's going from town center to town center, so like your town center going to like the town line, mm-hmm. which then goes to their town center on the mm-hmm. same road, mm-hmm. essentially, that is like the highest points. And then if it's going from like a town center to a place, so if you had like a factory, a big mm-hmm. industrial yeah. or another village center type thing, that gets you the next points down. And if it's like a place to a place, and that's the next one down. And that's a category, and then so it's like the different categories of what it is. Something kind of new that we discussed actually yesterday with the group that oversees this. So it's Jonathan Croft in their mapping section. So he's who brings around, I think he probably brought you some 2025 town maps this year, or will if you haven't seen him yet. And so his section does the scoring and stuff, and he was talking about how in recent times with the flooding and stuff, if you've had a road where maybe it usually doesn't qualify for a Class 3 or something, but then like when you have a road that's a high-risk road and it's gone out in the last two storms or something, and this road ended up being like the main route people needed, mm-hmm. That could be an exemption where that could get you enough points. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a new discussion category for mm-hmm. points based on kind of low circumstances where it was like, when all of especially in Kirby, when all of our roads were out, mm-hmm. this was the main road we were using. Mm-hmm. And if another storm event were to happen, like that could be the same case. Mm-hmm. You could argue that this road needs to just have improvements done and should be acting as a Class 2. So maybe it's the main road that goes mm-hmm. out to Lindenville, it's Kirby Mountain that brings you straight to Severance Hill or Route 2.
And that was Doug Morton that was doing that.
So he'll do the traffic count for you.
Josh something, wasn't it? You just said Josh or John?
Nope, Doug. Oh, Doug would do that. And then, Jonathan Croft is the mapping section. That's who you'd submit the request to. Oh. So the requests are due every December 1st. So through the summer, if you were ever to look into that, you'd have to make sure you get your traffic count in place. You could work with Doug about kind of doing these upgrades. You can contact me to help with some of the process. The Orange Book kind of explains it a little bit more thorough, mm-hmm. And it shows you an example of that scoring sheet mm-hmm. In there. So there is a process, and in definitely like this road that goes over to, or the road that goes over to Victory and stuff, like that's kind of a normal one that would qualify in most days.
Right.
And probably the only reason maybe it hasn't in past years is maybe the traffic count's not high. I don't know if the town's ever tried to make it Class 2. If it didn't pass the test for points.
Victory is Class 4.
Right, that would be at the top.
Yeah, it doesn't go to the rest of that Victory, goes to Concord.
Yeah, it would have to be upgraded to a Class 3, and then so if it's Class 4 now, then it probably doesn't have a history of being used as such.
No, we wouldn't do that. We're more worried about this main road that goes from here all the way to Concord. Meets the town line in Concord.
Yep, so that would be more of a road that would qualify, especially if it's going to Concord. To like Concord or North Concord to mm-hmm. an area where it's more populated and it's like a pretty traveled route, then it could qualify. We can talk more if you have one in mind. I can mm-hmm. kind of look at it a little more in depth.
Are there any other benefits to changing it from a Class 3 to a Class 2 besides it qualifying for other grants? Like, do we get more highway aid if it's a Class 2?
Yes. So your rates for your aid go up. So your rate for a Class 3 is 1,700. So a Class 3 road gets 1,783 per mile, and a Class 2 gets 4,786 per mile. So it's about $3,000 more per mile mm-hmm. of state aid. And that's why it gets more state aid, and that's why there's a little more stringent rules about what ones they can be. You know, the state isn't looking to just have anything upgraded. And then the other overall thing, which is more of a, it's not a hard stop. It's a kind of a point that just brings up some conversation, is a ratio. So you can't have more than 40%, can't have more than 40% of your roads be class two. So they're saying you should have a 40% class two to a 60% class three ratio or less. So if you're near that, it doesn't mean that it can't happen. So like Victory is well over that because they just don't have a lot of roads in general. And they have a long stretch of a class two that kind of goes right from Concord to Granby through Victory. So that road is class two already. And then that just takes up a big portion of their overall mileage. So they're above that. So it's not a hard stop where it can't happen. It's just more of a, is it needed? What other, you know, what other circumstances are in play?
What do we consider that road now? Class three or two?
Kirby Mountain is class three.
Ridge
Road is the only
class two.
Ridge Road is only
class
two. Yep. And in a class two. But with this, we've got that, the Kirby Mountain Road where it drops off. That's always been an issue. Where we had that washout a few years ago. That's always been an issue.
Yeah, and the jump from a three to a two comes with a little more strict, you know,
and we
codes and standards.
We can't widen that anymore because it's,
So that
it's
could be a,
and then it's the, and
yeah,
then it's
so
the,
that could be a pain point for that, is bringing it up to codes and standards to be able to consider it. And then it comes, so it comes with a little more maintenance and stuff as well. If it were to be upgraded at some point, it would qualify for the Class 2 roadway grant, and it doesn't mean it has to be paved either. So a dirt road actually has to be wider than a paved road. So if you pave it, it only has to be 20 feet wide. If it's not paved, it has to be 22 feet wide. But yeah, it's just something you could think about. You know, it's nothing you got to do right off. It's been three for a while, and it seems like that's working fine. But it's always an option if, you know, especially if you... if
widening it would be a crank in some places.
Yes. In fact, 181 doesn't come into play and people develop it and you have more people over there, then maybe it's worth doing.
Is it even in play yet?
I don't know.
No.
I heard it was. But.
No.
Well, the 181. I think it was passed 2 years ago. It just was being released in tiers of like released in sections of it. So like the dates of the next implementation are coming up and that's what they're trying to delay. We don't need to get into that.
No.
Could you run me back those numbers? You said class 2, 217 something.
Yep. So a class 2 roadway receives $4,786.19 per mile. And a class 3 roadway receives $1,783.19 per mile.
There was something you said about... 217 and then 410 point something miles. It was the last thing you said before we branched off on the discussion of 2 and 3.
Yeah, what we received was
217. How much we qualify for, I think, for the Class 2 roadway.
Oh, yeah. So the Class 2 roadway grant and the structures grant both have a state match of 200,000. With all of your check boxes in place for the better match, which you would be is if you sign up the if you either adopt these codes and standards and sign that certification, and or this year sign the 2019 certification like you have been doing, that improves your match because you already have your network inventories in place. So that would increase the structures grants, goes from an 80-20 match to a 90-10 match, 90% state, 10% town. And the Class 2 roadway grant goes from a 70-30 match up to an 80-20 match. And then the state's match caps out at 200,000 for both. So we match that split up into that. And then once we hit that cap, then the rest of the amount above that would be on the town.
What was the stat or statistic that put us in 5 out of 10? The top 10?
Yep. So that's the number you were referring to. So that is the eligibility or the ranking of towns to receive the award for Class 2 program each year is based on the dollars spent in the Class 2 program divided by the Class 2 mileage for each town. So in the Class 2 grant program life, Kirby's received $217,796. So basically $218,000. And then you have 4.01 miles of Class 2 roadway. So the total divided by that mileage equals $54,313. And we just do that to rank the towns to keep it like equitable. So as towns, so if you picture kind of the whole state as a whole, the Class 2 grant program is trying to keep all the towns, basically keep the same amount of money given to all the Class 2 roadways in the state, regardless of boundaries, essentially. Yeah. And then that kind of gets broken up into district chunks to manage. Okay. So you're just kind of competing against the other towns in District 7 each year for that grant. You're kind of sitting fifth. So you're sitting fifth. Next year, if any of the towns above you receive a grant, they'd probably bump below you and you'd stay up, but you wouldn't fall down the six. You'd kind of stay hovering in there, and you know, unless a change happens to the program, but you'd mm-hmm. kind of stay in that eligibility or that ranking until you receive the grant, and then you'd fall to wherever that kind of threw you down the list. And then that's kind of how the grant program works, is the towns kind of bubble up to the top, and then as they receive grants, they fall down.
Right.
And if you were, say you were 15th in line out of the 30 towns I have, that doesn't mean that if you submitted one, you wouldn't get one. It is all based off of that order for grants that are submitted by the 15th. So if the towns ahead of you don't submit one, then you might be the top town receiving one that year. Or you could be 15th and only three towns above you submit one, so your grant gets awarded that year as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to spend all the money I have, regardless of who's mm-hmm. above who, mm-hmm. When it comes to it. It is first come, first serve in that order. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then grants, the 15th is the deadline. That doesn't mean you couldn't ever submit a grant past that date, but priority goes to those. So come the 15th, I'm going to try to spend all the money I have. Mm-hmm. If I have leftover money, it doesn't mean I wouldn't take a grant that was submitted later, but grants before that date get priority. So if mm-hmm. a town below you submitted a grant by that date and you didn't submit one to after, they would have priority over you even though you're higher on the list just mm-hmm. because they met that date for submission. And that doesn't really come in play much for the Class 2 roadway grants. A lot of times structures, like later in the year, they're like, oh, could we get any money for this structure? And I have, you know, $60,000 I couldn't spend. I'll be like, yep. And then in like August, September timeframe, at our district PM meeting, I discuss with all the other PMs and we kind of see who has what for money and who has what for kind of grants that either weren't awarded by the 15th deadline, you know, I didn't have enough money to award one, but it could really be used, or, you know, something's come up since then, we might pool money. So if I have an extra $30,000 left over I couldn't spend because the grants that were asking for more than that, it didn't make sense to just give a town $30,000 when they really needed, you know, the full grant or something. Right. I might give my $30,000 to another district mm-hmm. to pool it with there so they can award a grant. So that happened with us last year. Two other districts gave me money and I was able to do one more grant on my list. So we try to do that just so the overall program is getting funded every year. Mm-hmm. We try to drain that account every year, and that just looks good for the next year when we go back to legislation and we testify this program. Mm-hmm. Again, they like to see a zero balance or an allocated mm-hmm. pot there versus money sitting there and say, well, you didn't even spend it all. Why are we going to give you the same amount this next year? We can give you this much less. Mm-hmm. So we like to show it. And that's the same thing where I encourage you, if there's a need for a grant, then submit a grant. Mm-hmm. I only discourage you if you're kind of in the top and looking at getting one and you really don't want to get it because you don't want, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have the match this year. And then I might be like, you'd probably get it if you submitted, so you might want to wait if that's the case. Other than that, then, you know, show that need for those grants. It keeps the program going. Mm-hmm. So the change this year is that the structures grants are now following a very similar thing to the Class 2 roadway grants. So previously, structures grants were awarded based off a couple, like a bunch of different criteria. So it was like age of the structure, how far it's deteriorated, you know, if the structure were to collapse or close, like what's the impact to the, you know, the residents. All those kind of came into play. And then over the past years, we would never have enough submissions. So last year was the first year that I had more grants submitted than I had money to award. Because a lot of them were, you know, people would ask for $80,000, would ask for $120,000. Mm-hmm. So I could just do a lot more grants. Now with the grant you know, with the storms and everything, the grant requests are, everyone wants that full 200,000. So now I'm only offering, you know, I can only award 5 grants, where before I could maybe do 8 of them. So last year was the first time I had 6 grants in play. I could only really award 5. I had a little money left over. So I talked to the 6th person. I said, would you consider, you know, doing the engineering this year and the structures next year? Because we used to do kind of that play. So I was still able to award each town something. In some other districts, that was the same case where they used to be able to award everything. And there was one town in the Northwest who just happened to submit a grant every 4 years. So you go back in the history and it was every 4 years, you know, religiously for a few years. Then this year was, this past year was their 4th year. So they submitted and they didn't get awarded because they were, you know, had actually been awarded quite a bit over time and other towns were ahead of them. So they were denied their grant. They caused a huge stink because they were owed that grant. It was the 4th year. They get one every 4 years. The state is being, treating them poorly, being, you know, unfair to them. They were owed that money and now they're not getting it. And so it, basically nothing had changed in how we were awarding. It just, they fell in a category and they just happened to be every 4 years. So in their mind, they got one every 4 years. You know, that was their understanding, even though it was inaccurate. And I guess no one realized that's how they were thinking. They reached out their representatives and said, we're, you know, being mistreated by the state in this grant program and stuff. And that, with some other frustrations of grant programs in general, just kind of brought up the conversation of how are these grant programs being managed? How do you pick who gets what? So they went through and they found nothing wrong with what we were doing, but they asked that the structures grant be changed to reflect a better understanding to towns about how they would be selected. So they just asked us to do something and make it more equitable and easier to understand. So the last year we met a few times, me and my counterparts, to try to figure out what made the most sense, what was equitable, what was still, you know, kind of fair in general. And then we came to determination and we ran that up our chain, which got thumbs up. And then it went to those couple representatives that had their ear kind of to this, and they liked it. So basically now the structures program is mimicking the class 2 program, where it is the total funding over time in the structures program and its existence divided by the number of eligible structures you have in the town to receive that grant. And that's what ranks you now. So now we're not really able to kind of do the, we'll give you engineering this year and structures next year. We could still do that as long as you are in place for that, other than just kind of the, we were just kind of like promising you a grant next year and giving you engineering 1 year and just kind of playing that a little more based off the other criteria. And now it's kind of, it's a lot simpler, but it also does change things. So I still don't get a ton of grants submitted. So if you submit, you still might see something. But if more and more grants and more and higher amounts are being submitted, it's going to fall into this eligibility ranking a little more like the class twos do. So for Kirby, you have 38 structures that are 36 inches or larger, and that is the criteria for a structures grant, is any structure that is 36 inches or larger.
36 inches.
Yep, that's what makes it eligible to receive the grant. And then that also includes like your large bridges that are 20-foot span or larger, and those are the ones that qualify for the Town Highway Bridge Program that you get on the list through Doug Morton. You have one structure in Kirby that falls into that eligibility. It is still eligible to receive a structures grant if it's a replacement or a big project on it. Like, our money's not going to go very far. Right. But if you're doing a membrane or you're doing some scour protection or something like that, like, our grant might cover that work as far as, like, a maintenance on those larger structures. And then everything else that is, like, under 20 feet but above 36 is all just included in this column of that 38. So you have 39 structures overall that are eligible, 38, one bridge, and 38 being structures less than 20-foot span.
So there's one segment that I have in mind that John and I were talking about, and it's an old stone culvert. And we had Jaron Borg came and looked at it and gave us a recommendation and stuff. But to qualify, I have to see if it's at least 36 inches or larger.
Yes. Correct. Or, so the other caveat of eligibility is it's 36 inches or larger is what is being built. So...
being put in its place.
Yep, so if it's on a stream and your H&H memo says it needs to be 36 or larger, mm-hmm. then it's still eligible because that's what you're building.
Okay.
So even if the structure right now might be a 24 by 24, right. if hydraulic says it has to be over 36, that makes it eligible as well.
Okay.
And that also brings up the point that these numbers, where we pull these numbers from, the bridge ones are on the bridge inspection map. And documented there, all of your culverts are documented in your vtculverts.org map. Mm-hmm. That is managed by Doug Morton in that group.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have your login. So that is where I'm going to pull this number every January. So if you do update any structures and make them larger, every January I'll go in there and verify this 38 or change it to the new number. So if you do upgrade any structures up to 36 or larger, just make sure they're captured in that map. Because if this number increases, then that might change where you fall for your ranking. And other towns are doing the same thing, but it's always good to make sure that number is accurate. And I'm going to, just as a rule, I'm going to pull it every January. And that is where we, the PMs, decided we were going to take that number from, because that is a map that is available and managed by all the towns and should be. So versus, you know, the old flip-through book that you might have in town that says what the structures are and scribbled on, saying, oh, we increased this one. This is kind of where the state kind of wants towns to go for, is having more of an electronic thing, because you can also capture your conditions on there and stuff like that. So that is a spot where we're telling towns, this is where we're going to pull that number from, and therefore it's kind of more equal for all the towns.
And you said we have an account where we can...
Yep, so you should have a login through Doug Morton, how to log in there and update, you know, change any structure sizes, change the conditions of the structures.
So maybe I should get a hold of Doug and have him... Okay.
And surprisingly, only a few of my towns actually have their login information.
And what is that again that I should ask him about?
So it's a vtculverts.org map. I think he's going to be getting a lot of phone calls this year asking for that information. So that map was originally...
I know I've been on that site, but I didn't know we could
have... So we use that site a lot for just locating culverts or during the storms, trying to figure out what it used to be and locations. We pull a lot of latitude and longitudes off that. Your culvert numbers are on there.
Yeah.
It's documented there.
The
system automatically assigns a culvert number to it. If the town didn't have any culvert numbering system in place when the data got put in there. So I think it was like 2000, maybe 13, 14 time frame. It was either Linden State or UVM came through and made the map, added all your structures into it. So it's not to say that it's perfectly accurate. So at some point you might want to verify the culverts in there, because it was college kids that went through and did it. And they did really good, but there could be some discrepancies in there. If you haven't touched it since, it's only as accurate as it was 10 years ago, possibly. So
where we had all these culverts replaced after the 27 storm, they need to be reevaluated.
Probably, yeah. It probably good to
Who
do.
Who wants to help
do that.
Me?
So if you didn't have anything on your summer plans. And it's nothing that needs to happen right off. I just want to be transparent about where I'm going to pull these numbers from. So if it takes a couple years to do that, it's not like you're not in compliance with anything. It's just something that slowly needs to be updated and worked on.
Goodness.
That update would be obviously a circumstance where the structure was increased in size.
Yep, and even if it was... just replaced in kind, where it's the same size, you can rate the conditions of like good, fair, poor, critical in there. So,
junk.
You know, it could be critical in there, and now you've upsized it to a good. So every year, you know, John could go in there and like look at the whole map and be like, oh, here's my worst culverts for the year. So I'm going to plan to do these five this summer and replace them. And it can just be an updated list of what work needs to be done in the town. And that would also fall in line with kind of with your road erosion inventory. When you have culverts along those sections that you're improving, you'd already kind of know those conditions ahead of time. So if you submit for a grants and aid or better roads for one of those sections, you could be like, oh, it's a section. Plus, I know we have two culverts we need to definitely need this.
That's kind of what John and I have been doing. When I did the road erosion inventory, he kind of gave me input on, even though it looks good and it looks like it passes, the culvert underneath is crumbling.
And this is 36 inches and up.
Correct, grant. For our structures
for this
program.
Grant.
For that grant. So the map shows everything. So your 12s, 15s, 18s, everything are
don't
on there.
Yeah.
They just don't qualify for that grant specifically. But
they would if you went up
They would if they have. So if it's drainage and you're just increasing drainage, they don't. But if it's like an intermittent stream or a perennial stream where the sizing requires it to be larger, then they do qualify. If you're just changing it, that initial change doesn't. But then once it is larger, it does moving forward. So just kind of a weird little caveat
and
where
each
it's
one
like
of
you're choosing to make it.
Are H&H tested?
So H&H study would be anything on a perennial stream. And then your intermittent streams would be the ones that do dry up at some point in the year, but kind of flow a majority of the year. Those ones have a different sizing method, which we'll talk a little bit about today, because it's in your 2019 ones, but we did change kind of a little bit of how we display that.
Okay.
So nothing changed on how to size them. We just weren't doing a good job of like having towns go through the steps to size it the right way. I'll talk about that a little bit. And then any structures that are less than 36 inches and fall on your Class 2 roadway, you can redo those culverts as part of your Class 2 roadway grant. It still has to be like a resurfacing section or sub-base section, paving, whatever. But any structures within those things, same with guardrail and signs, anything that kind of falls in that stretch that you're doing the grant for, those can all be incidental to that grant work and reimbursed with that grant. And then your grants and aid and your better roads grants can cover culverts that are in those segments that you're updating as well. So there is a way to get a lot of them covered that are less than 36.
Mm-hmm.
And when does the grants and aid come out?
So I think you probably just saw an email just recently about
Aaron
that.
Aaron just forwarded me something. I'm not sure if this is part of it or not.
It came from the hazard mitigation.
So this one's a little different. Building resilient infrastructure in communities. So I think this is more so based off of like every now and then when there's FEMA things, there's some funding that gets kind of allocated to the state in different ways. So it looks like this is for hazard mitigation through FEMA funding. Local community and territories undertake hazard mitigation projects to reduce risk from natural hazards. So you would reach out to like Kim Kanarecki and those folks at Vermont Emergency Management, and they would be able to tell you exactly what qualifies or doesn't qualify.
Okay.
But it looks like it's building related. So like Lindenville, they lost their town building in the flood. It flooded and everything. So this would be a grant to help make it more resilient in that flooding. So like whether it's, I don't want to over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Overreach.
So it's building as in housing and stuff. It's not building as in bridge building, that type of thing.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like it's applications for scoping and infrastructure projects, management costs. So it looks like there's a grant to study what needs to be done and then grants to actually do some of the work. So I don't know if that's relocate buildings, if it's other kind of drainage around building stuff.
Okay. So this came from, this did not come from you.
No, PPSVEM. So that'd be like Kim Kanarecki's group.
Okay.
Mark Johnson is her boss, so it'd be his section. And
okay.
There's more people than Kim that work in that section. So you probably have one for some of your FEMA stuff towards the end when you're doing the closeouts.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So Kim could be your person, and then sometimes it's like there's like an Alana. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different ones that work in that area that you might just see. It'd be kind of that group that would help
with
those.
We didn't really have any building structures
And I would still ask them if it's only buildings or if it's something else, because infrastructure is a pretty broad term. So when they use the term building, that makes me lean towards that. But it's a focus on that, but other things are eligible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's always good to just know exactly, and they would be the best person for that. But there was
an
email.
So, going back to the grant and aid.
Yeah, I'll see if I can look at it on my phone, because there was an email I just saw last. I was off Monday and Tuesday this week. But I thought I saw something come in about deadlines, because I think your deadlines are, I want to say, like August, September time frame. The deadline for reimbursement is like September 30th to finish your grants. I also wanted to say that was like the application, but then there's like the letter of intent for one of those programs is earlier in the year.
I did submit a letter of intent just the other day.
Okay.
It was like an online type of thing.
Yep.
Yep.
And that might be what this email is referring to is getting those in. I'm not even sure.
And
who
it didn't ask for a board signature. Right. It just asked.
And that one where you submit your letter of intent, that is pretty much free money, kind of. It's letter of intent, and they basically you have this set amount. I don't know if it's based on road mileage or population of each town. So every town has basically, you could get this much if you apply for it. And it's just kind of sitting there waiting for you to use it. So I always encourage everyone to, you know, to capitalize on that and grab that money versus like your better road just has your category A, B, C, and D. You have to apply and be awarded. That one is pretty much if you sign up for letter of intent and say we're going to use it on these sections and those sections do need that work, you'll get that money.
Okay.
So it's the grant and aid side of it.
Okay.
Did you send it in just based on principle, or were you?
Well, I know. Before they had a letter of intent, and if you don't fill out that letter of intent, then you can't proceed forward with the next step. And that's all it is just a letter of intent. You're not signing up for anything.
Right.
So they don't ask for a board's signature. It's just saying that we potentially could be interested when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
When the time comes.
Not specific, but in the beginning.
Yeah, so it's, they put you on a list, to my understanding, if you fill out that letter of intent, then they put you on a list, so when that grant does come available, you are the one that they will send it to. If you don't fill it out, then they're not going to send it to
you. They're not even going to call you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so this went all to the, so it came from the state, so it would have been an email from Vermont Local Roads Program.
Local Roads.
Yep, whichever email address you have in the Vermont Local Roads list would have received this email, and it is that letter of intent submitted by May 1st, 2026 to be eligible for grants and aid.
Okay.
Yep, so eligible.
All right, I'll look back on my emails and see if that's what it was.
To be eligible for.
Yeah.
Yep. And then eligible, best management practicing, so it's things like grass and stone line ditches, turnouts, lowering of high road shoulders. It's basically all those things that put you into the partially compliant or not compliant for road segments. Yep. So it looks like it came from that email address, and then my district's kind of split up, so I have Doug Morton and NVDA for most of my towns, and then the bottom section I have like six towns that fall under Rita, who's part of Three Rivers Planning Commission. Unfairly, she is way, way better than Doug at being proactive with towns. So she re-forwarded this email to all the towns down there
was her name again?
So her name's Rita. So
Rita.
She's Doug's counterpart for another region. And she resends the email to all the towns and says, reminder, this is coming up. Make sure you get your stuff in. Doug doesn't do that stuff.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let me look back through my emails.
I wish Doug did everything Rita did personally. She just, she's very proactive and very, she definitely gets her towns to capitalize on all those stuff just by poking a little bit more and being around. Doug is more of a, if you need help, come find me.
Mm-hmm.
She's more of a, hey, go get this help.
Right.
Go do it.
But, okay.
I have a question, but it's not grant related.
Nope, go ahead.
So we fill out the compliance agreement every year.
Yes.
But we were talking about like the FEMA projects that are still unfinished.
Yep.
If by chance we run out of money and are not able to do one of those, I mean, if it's temporarily done, it's working, it's solid, but if we can't do it the way the H&H study tells us we have to, can we still say that we're compliant?
That is a can of worms. A good question. If you've taken any of the FEMA funding, you've kind of signed up that you're doing something, so you may have to give that funding back if you haven't, if you're not going to
prepay us for anything. Oh, okay. You mean for the temporary work? Yeah.
So the temporary work, if you've done that and they paid for temporary work, but you're not going to finish the scope and they've given you any money towards the scope, that has to go back.
The scope of the work to be finished as a complete job.
Right. If it's like the next step of it.
Right. They haven't for the.
So some towns they so. I don't, and I have no idea when they do or don't, because I was under the impression they don't do anything until you've done the work. But I guess some towns you can sign up to get that money early, and some towns did. So some towns were like paid out their 75.
I don't think the town knew how to do that.
Yeah, which isn't a bad thing, because some towns put themselves in a real pickle where they got 75% of their
cost.
Basically of like their estimated costs for these projects. And then at the end of the day, their bidding came in low, or, you know, so they saved money, but they went out and bought more stone or more something. They kind of spent that money, even though now that the projects are less, they have to give whatever the difference was back. You know, they're, what they can keep is only 75% of the new total. And then there's also the caveat of, why didn't it cost what the estimate was? Is that due to just like, the bid came in lower and we got a good deal, or we didn't follow the scope? So if you don't follow the scope, then you have to get it reversioned, and it can't fall backwards. So like if you have a scope that's basically saying that you need to, the H&H study is requiring it to be this, you can't get it reversioned to not follow that, because that is what your codes and standards and A&R requires, is for it to be that. If you are having trouble with like money to match that, so essentially you have your 75% from FEMA that they're going to pay. And maybe it's a point where we work with Kim and we get that 75 given. So maybe the town just doesn't have the money to get it started. Because you have 75% from FEMA, and then you have that remaining 25%, which is like the town's responsibility. But then the state steps in and gives 17 and a half. If you have all the boxes checked, that's the higher one. So they come in, they will do 17.5%. So then that drops it down to the town only having 7.5%. That's the town responsibility. If that is still another point where we don't have that money, we'll have to figure out what that conversation looks like. And if it is structure related, we could, I'd have to talk to the grant program manager, but maybe there's something where like the structures grant could cover some of those costs as well.
See, and we were told don't combine FEMA with grants.
And we're not supposed to. And essentially, and that's why I think it'd be a no, but I think it's there has been some special circumstances just to the, due to the magnitude that the state has been hit. So like the 2025 storm wasn't declared, and then the appeal was also denied. So those towns that were hit hard with that kind of sent in letters to, you know, they had already sent in letters federally, but then they kind of directed those letters to the governor's office and said, what are we going to do? You know, like, don't really like saying names stuff, but like the town of Sutton is really hurting. They were hit with every storm there's been, and they have, you know, they've got loans borrowed where they're like, our budget literally is not spent paying this loan back. Like we're, you know, we're not even doing maintenance for, we're doing half our maintenance for the next few years because our money just needs to go pay this loan back that we've pulled. So they're really struggling. And then now they have this, you know, they have over $1 million that they were hit in this 25 storm that didn't get declared. So they're like, that's just $1 million that we have to spend with no match.
Right.
So the, it did sound like yesterday there was some leeway on that, that the state is putting a certain portion of money into, I guess, which is funny, I'm the only district affected, so I get this opportunity to have this fourth category of my grant program that's going to be the special temporary grant program to just fund those. Right. I figured they would go through the emergency grant program in this, but they don't want to blend the money, the pool of money with that pool of money.
Yeah.
So it's going to be this other thing. So I'm not even sure how it's going to work. And Chad, who's the program manager, was like, I'm going to get more details before I get you all worried about how how to manage it. So
for 2025, we should just say that we are compliant, and then, I mean, for 2026.
So 2026.
And then we hope everything is fixed by 2027.
Yep. So in compliance doesn't mean that you're compliant today.
Okay.
It
just
means that you are working towards
it
compliance.
Means we try to be.
Which
right.
We
exactly.
Have.
So if you don't have that match, you know,
okay.
you and you can your FEMA money is available for a certain time, and if for some reason you didn't get the work done, and if that's kind of funding related, and well, we can just allocate some taxes towards that and not do this section of road we're going to do, and we got to re-divert this plan towards this funding. You can do extensions. So I think once you do an extension, like you get another 18 months or something with those. So that is something you definitely want to work with Kim Kanarecki about, extending those grant things. She would know the exact deadlines and how far out it would extend, and then you could use that information to know about what you need to contribute for match. And then also she will be the one to talk to about like early release funds. Can we get any of it now to help us get it going? Okay. You know, if you've got bills due for engineering and no money to pay those, and that's why you're worried, then maybe you can get some of those funds and pay that bill and then go to the next step. Her and or one of the EM people that help manage that would be the person who could really get some of those going.
And if we, the benefit of being compliant is it makes it so we can apply for grants, right?
Yeah, so like your grants and aid and your better roads.
And our highway aid depends on this too?
So highway aid doesn't depend on that specifically, but it does depend on you being compliant in general with state regulations, which part of codes and standards, probably about 70% of codes and standards are regulations anyways. The other 30% is like best management practices that. So like in this, the ones up here that say like yes and there's no option, those ones you have to follow by state statute. So those are the ones that kind of your state aid is dependent on. And then these kind of yes or no ones where you get to choose, those are like the best management practices where if you're signing up for some of those, you get the better grant match and everything. Not following the state laws is where your state aid is going to start coming into question. So not necessarily whether you have these adopted or not. So there is no requirement to have codes and standards adopted. Towns get the choice to do it because any part of this that is mandatory, you are still mandated to do that whether you have these adopted or not. But if you have the latest version adopted, that is the benefits. So there's not really the pros and cons are basically, if it's adopted, you get the better grant match for my grants. You get, I think the municipal grants, the grants in aid and better roads do rely on you having these in play. And then if FEMA event were to hit, they're not going to recognize any grants but these ones. So you're not going to be able to build them. We're going to be in this caveat where the state requires you to upsize something. And those ones, so if it's an H&H making it upsize, I haven't, since all my towns have these in play, I don't know how that conversation goes because it's still a state requirement to have it sized appropriately by A&R. So I would feel that FEMA is still going to abide by that. But like any of your other best management practices and stuff as far as putting back in stone line ditches, keeping things up to code, like if your code and standards doesn't require it to be that way, FEMA isn't going to pay that. So it's like that difference of like upsizing a culvert that's an intermittent stream, that's not required by size. So if like that's required to be upsized per A&R, or best management requires it to be upsized, you'd be on the hook for that
to
cost.
Pay that. Yeah.
And I'll talk a little more about the differences between the two and some of those that are in play. So it is beneficial to have those in place. And my thought, you know, my sales pitch, for lack of better words, is the fact that the stuff that's required is still required. And then all the other side of it, that's the best management practices. That is what's going to make John's life over time easier to maintain your roads. You know, your MRGP and all that stuff. Like, if you're going through and you're doing three sections of compliance for MRGP and then you're skipping 100 feet and then you're doing another section that's compliant, 100 feet in the center, like, you're not going to not keep that same mindset right through there. You know, you're not going to stop taking the berm off, skip that section, and then start taking the berm off the next. You know, you're going to do it anyway.
Right.
So you're doing that. You might as well reap the benefits from saying you're doing that as well, signing up. And I'll go through those a little more. So you're still refreshing on what the 19 kind of required, and then the small changes kind of between the two. Aaron, just one more point on your thing. So for this year, the 2019 one is what you'd want to sign.
Yeah, I
for,
think I have it over there. We haven't actually filled these out yet because we had the question. But.
And if you do think you're just going to sign the 2026 codes and standards, update them, and sign that certification, then don't worry about the 19 certification. If you're not going to do that till kind of after the 15th deadline, then get the 19 one signed and submitted, and that will get you the better match for this year. Come next year, I'm going to require the 26 to be in play for that match. So I just didn't want
so
you
should
to.
Should 19 for this year.
And that's only if that's and I'm just saying that just to give you a little more breathing room to sign the 26 ones or have more discussion on it. If you don't have another select board meeting between now and April 15th, you don't.
Do.
So if you do, then it might not matter. But some towns like they weren't going to have another one yet. So basically to take the pressure off and wait, you know, not to have to call a special meeting between then and then just to do that form. Mm-hmm. You sign the 2019 like you have been, you get the match, you're good to go. And it just gives you time to do that one. And because there's no requirement for it to be on, there's no deadline for it to be done, essentially. So basically, just the 19 is just wiggle room. The 26 is going to be like what I hopefully have you do sooner than not. But yeah, so if a FEMA event were to hit, they're going to be recognizing the 26 outline moving forward. So that's kind of your biggest thing. And then your grants and aid later in the summer are going to require that update.
Everybody understand that? Sign the 2019 one.
And then, so we'll do that a bit later. So that's different. So I do have the 19 one printed out, and that is just if you're going to do that. If you do have a select board meeting, like you said, between now and the 15th deadline, and you feel like you're going to sign the 26, or you do decide to sign it, the 26 at that, like maybe you bring all of this to that meeting, and if you sign that one, forget the 19. If the board decides, nah, let's discuss this at the next meeting as well, let's not make a decision today, then just sign the 19 one and get that in. And you'll be set for this year's grant opportunity. And if you weren't submitting a grant at all, then it doesn't matter about the 19 one.
Right.
And then this is just the Class 2 and Class 1 centerline painting. So they'll come through and paint centerline on Ridge Road. If you were to be doing any paving on that, let them know. If you're not doing any paving, let them know that, and hopefully you get your lines a little bit earlier. But if you are painting, you tell them, and hopefully they don't come and paint it prior to you paving over that new paint.
We need to have them paint the damn lines the way they're supposed to. Last few years, they put a break in it that shouldn't exist.
We're going to repaint this section down here anyway.
Right on the corner. So it confuses everybody as to which way you can go, and it always used to be painted up and around the corner as it comes from Red Village to Ridge Road, and then they just friggin' stop. So now everybody just kind of, I mean, from this direction there's an open place stop sign. That's cut and dry, but coming down the hill or up the road, they should have done that
and
differently.
And there's no good way to sign it either.
Yeah, so it is
caution.
Normal practice is to make breaks at side roads. So that's probably what they're doing, is making that break. If you specifically,
even though your main flow of traffic wants to be,
and yours just happens at your side roads on a corner, mm-hmm. So it causes more confusion. But yeah, so normally you'd have a break in center line because your center line is suggesting you don't cross it in any normal thing. So when you have side roads, they do a break to tell the cars that, yep, here's the part where you should be crossing to take the side road.
That's why.
If you wanted it painted through, it's against
rules.
I don't know if it's rules, because there's no law about that. It's just kind of best management, is that's how you do it. So you could request that it's painted right through because it's a circumstance where it's confusing cars and causing it to be a little more unsafe by not having the brake.
Half of that's going to get ripped up this
yeah.
summer.
So anyway, you could reach out to Demetrio is the contact for that. It's not that far, it's the other paper, but
yep.
Reach out to meet Demetrio and just say, hey, we have a lot of issues with the brake here. Could we have it striped through? And he might come back and say, oh, it has to be this because I don't know. But I don't see why he couldn't just make the change and do that. Or if you notice out there striking that day,
never,
just be like, hey, skip this intersection.
I never understood it that way. And to my recollection in years past, it was always solid.
Yep. And maybe that
three or four.
Yeah, maybe originally that was why it was like that, is because there was confusion there. I do know that is why by default they skip that
gotcha.
And make that break.
Do you want to be the one to speak with them, Jeff? Do you want to be the one to speak with
him? Yeah, I don't have any troubles with anybody.
And just let him know that we're doing that project at the top, too.
And then worst comes to worst, what they do in some cases, more in like urban areas, where they do the dotted travel line. So like in big intersections where it's a little more than one lane and it's a little confusing when you're turning onto a side road that you don't kind of cut in front of another car. If two lanes turn, they have that dotted line to kind of keep you flowing. So you could ask at a minimum if he's like, oh, no, we got to leave the brake. You could at least request that it be a dotted brake. So therefore, cars are still, they're still kind of hitting that checkbox of there's a line there. But then it's also dotted to show, a kind of like, yep, keep going this way on the road. But this is the spot where you'd cross to that side road. So that could be maybe a compromise if they're not willing to stripe it through. But I'm guessing if you found it's L&D usually that does all the things. And if you caught the truck out there and told them to stripe it through, it'll be like, I'm on the select board, we like this stripe through, or I'm on the road crew. They're probably going to listen to you.
How will we ever catch
the stripe? I don't know. I don't know even know if they never tell you when they're showing up. So it's just like you happen to see the truck going by. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you get out there and you see fresh paint run up the road and be like, hey. But yeah, I'd reach out to me, Joe. Maybe you can just kind of get that changed prior to them showing up, and they can make that change in the plans. And this is just the updated contact sheet for the town. And then this is the latest Show Me the Money guide. And if no one's changed, if all the players are the same in town, you can just write same on it. And that works for me also. So no need to fill the whole thing out again if nothing changed for anybody.
Right.
And if it's just one select board member that swapped out, just make that one change at the top. Because I keep a running list, and I just basically go through and make the changes from the previous year to the new year in the tracking sheet I have. So I don't need it all redone. This is the new Show Me the Money guide. So this is just updated 26, and the only changes in here are a couple contacts changed from the previous one, so they sent a new one up. All the grant programs are still the same grant programs that were in there before.
Okay.
I think I got that in an email, so if you guys, either one of you want that.
Yep, that got blasted out. Pretty much everything I'm going through today was all an email at some point.
Yeah.
I just like to have printed copies to hand out. I did print out your bridge inspection map. The bridge inspection from the bridge inspection map. So this is the one structure in town that's the 20-foot span or larger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your structure.
The one we just fixed?
I think this is Red Village Road, right? The one just in the below that you just...
The FEMA one we fixed?
I think so. This inspection is from 10/22/24, so that might be just post
you fixing it. And it's paved, so it's got to be it's gotta be Red Village Road.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah.
Structure number...
We don't have Dale's paved.
Yeah, and this picture, the picture isn't paved, but I think it's because it's damaged road. Those houses make me think it's that is the Red Village Road structure.
Oh, let me see. This isn't paved?
But I think it's supposed to be. I think it's just because it wasn't paved again yet, maybe.
Because we didn't have two culvert replaced. There's got no bridges there.
That looks like Mud Hollow, actually.
Okay, so it'd only be a structure that's like 20-foot span or larger.
Yes, it does. Does look like Mud Hollow.
And usually in the corner that
nowhere's around
it has that like road code, which I don't have memorized, and then it usually tells you what brook it over, and it just says brook. So it doesn't even
So help. I think it's those mobile homes that are on the other side of Mud Hollow.
So it's the Mud Hollow Bridge, must be.
Yeah,
so that's just the latest inspection of that, and it looks like it was inspected in October 24, which means that those happen biannually. So you'll have a new inspection coming this fall for that bridge. So you can compare this one to that one to see if anything, you know, if any of the numbers went down or if any other recommendations. They usually tell you farther in there any recommendations to do as far as...
So there's being 2 years later, there's going to be another inspection?
Yes. So all the 20-foot spans or larger get inspected by the state every 2 years for towns.
Okay.
So that's your one bridge that is in that category. So that bridge gets a biannual inspection.
So if they are coming by inspecting things, then I don't have to, right?
Just for that one bridge is what they'll do that one.
Oh, it's just the bridges. It's not the
no. So if you have a bridge
box,
that's
culverts. Or
correct. So if you have anything, even if you have a bridge that's 18 feet, they won't inspect. It has to be 20-foot span or larger.
Okay. Yeah, we did some work here on this bridge.
Yeah.
That's a brand new bridge that was put in there.
You did it last year?
No. The Lions did this job quite a while back.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
That was before.
2018, what's that?
14 or 15.
All we did was add retaining blocks to this wall right here.
Yeah.
So the water hits that and pushes it that through there better.
Yeah.
Yep. So if it's a fairly new bridge, probably that's not going to say much. But
it is a new bridge.
In the comments in there, you'll see if they're suggesting anything. So if they're seeing any scour or any, say you had girders, if there's any, you know, rust on the girders or something, like it's just kind of telling you those different elements and what they recommend happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff's good to follow just to keep that structure as good as possible and prevent having to replace the whole thing.
Okay. So would I find that on that website? the bridge and culvert website?
So your VT culvert one wouldn't have this one on it because this is a larger one, but this would be on the VTrans bridge inspection map. So in that letter right there, there's a link to that. So it's VT transparency.
And this one?
Yep. So there's a link on there and under bridge inspections. VT transparency is the link. I think it references. So that link will bring you to a page, and one of those options you click on are bridges.
Oh,
you click on that,
gracious.
And then you can look it up either on a map right or here. A drop-down menu.
Okay, so I should be checking that as well?
So that'll, so come probably, if it's October, it'll probably be December before the new report's uploaded. So come December, January timeframe, you'll have the new one. But I will also...
But it's only for that one bridge.
Only this one
bridge. In the whole town, just for that one bridge.
So this is all reported in 2022? Date reported 2022, is that right? When they did this maintenance thing?
That might have been updated, because right here it says inspection date 10/22/24.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's just because nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
So they just didn't change anything in that section.
So on your remarks here, this is what they suggest us doing.
Yeah, so settlement along each approach should be shimmed.
Yeah.
So that is just,
right.
You know, some of it isn't.
So what was that date, 10/22/24?
Yeah,
10/22/24,
yeah. Because we did work on that in the summer of 24.
We did.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, so that would have been on.
Bandy,
so yeah, so I might.
Were down there.
So I might wait until the new one comes out before planning anything on it. And some stuff is minor where, you know, like most of these, when I print them out for towns, a lot of them are like, oh, the guardrail's too low, or the guardrail has stuff built up on it, which is 90% of them are in that condition.
Yeah.
And they're low, and eventually the towns fix it. But,
All right.
But yeah, it has suggestions in there, and it looks like they just changed to a new inspection thing. So maybe if they skip a section, I'll have to talk to Spencer. He manages that group, Spencer Howard, and just be like, these dates should be... You know, even if it's a recommendation from 22 and it didn't change, it should at least be updated to say the 24 inspection.
I mean,
date,
like right
it's
here.
Still the same.
You know, they're stating this right here.
Yep.
I mean, the problem is you've got no headroom in here to do anything with a piece of machinery.
Yeah.
So and, how do you.
And probably nothing. This is, you know, so it looks like we're here, flood event. So maybe
right,
in
correct.
24 they came through and they just looked at it flood reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to hit your 2 year. Time frame anyway, so they just did it. They doubled up,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, sometimes when you get too much in there, you're decreasing that capacity that the structure can take through there.
Right.
But also, if it's costing you too much to get that material out, then it kind of just might stay.
Well, right here, you're saying add because his footing is showing right here.
Yeah.
He wants this covered back up. Well, that's only
leaving
me a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, and there are different contractors that have means to do that, but it's not easy, and it's a little more expensive, and you definitely have to reach out to A&R because you're playing in the river.
Yeah, you got some pretty good pictures here.
Yeah.
There's a stick right here. He wants this somewhat covered back up, so this isn't showing here.
Yeah, so in the text, he would write whether, like, undermining or scour present, so like minor approach settlement along abutment 2, abutment 1.
Abutment 1 has been filled in.
So just.
I'll have to check it, I guess.
Yeah, and some of the stuff, it's all suggestions, so it's
right.
Not like you're required to do that.
Okay.
It just, here's a weak point in the bridge currently.
Yeah.
And after storms, and like this is showing now because this was post the storm, but like if you went out, this new inspection could come in and there might be a lot of sediment that's built up here.
Right,
and
change that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You want this?
No, I'm just looking.
I can go with you on that one.
And then, so road erosion inventory, MRGP stuff. There is a round table next Wednesday, so on the 8th. There is one at the Lindenville Emergency Management Building. So it's in that conference room in the back of the fire department building.
Yeah.
So the Chad McGann from MRGP will be there. Doug Morton will be there. Vermont Local Roads will be there. I just got an email yesterday asking for accounts, so I guess you'll get the Vermont Local Roads, like your credits, your training credits, if you attend. Doug Morton's providing lunch, so I'm guessing it'll be House of Pizza Pizza. That's usually his go-to. And then in the afternoon, so in the morning, it'll be like a PowerPoint, opportunity for questions, clarifying stuff about MRGP and what you have to do, road erosion inventory and everything. And then the afternoon will be technical training for doing road erosion inventory assessments and also active channel sizing. So I don't know if Jaron will be there, somebody else from A&R,
so
or Chad.
I did see that, and I have grievances that day, so I'm not going to be able to make it. Where would be the next one closest to us?
So I'll give you this. So there's April 8th is Caledonia.
I have that in an email. I just don't know. I don't know where these other locations are.
Yep. So April 15th is Washington County, so that's central Vermont, and then April 29th is Orleans County. In Orleans,
just north.
I don't know if that's in the Barton area or if it's in Newport. I'm not sure where they house it, but we can find that out.
So maybe Orleans, Orleans would be the next one for me.
Yeah, and Doug does that area, so we can reach out to Doug and see where that one's going to be placed. But yeah, you can attend any or all of these if you want.
Yeah.
They just don't actually tell you the actual building because he was kind of doing those on the side. I actually might have an email that tells me where the District 9 one is, just because me and Jason were on the same email chain when we were talking about locations.
And District 9 is Orleans?
Yeah, so that's the Orleans County one, is like District 9 territory.
Yeah,
so I can check that real quick on my phone.
If you could tell me where that one is.
Yeah, so that one's April 29th.
The Caledonian one, I know I can't do it. I'm busy that day.
And yeah, and like I always just encourage everyone to attend them. You know, I think you do really well here. This is your progress report. And based on your progress report, you've met all of your targets so far. So all these sections in yellow are how many sections you have to still complete to meet the target. You have all zeros. You met them all. And you're actually 59 targets towards your next one.
Oh, good.
So you're 59 ahead. You got 59 credits. And as you know, there's no, like, finish line. Like, we finished it. We're good. So basically what this tells me is what you are currently doing for work and reporting works well.
Okay.
Keep doing what you're doing. So this is just an A plus for how you're managing it is working well. So even if you didn't attend this, I wouldn't have any worries that you're not doing it properly. But I always suggest it's a good time to go there because if there are any small tweaks about it, you can hear them right out of the cat's mouth. And, you know, and it's just you go there and a town asks a question like, oh, I never thought of that. You know, and you're hearing.
Well, it was easy last year because everything had just been rebuilt. Right.
Right. You and a couple other towns, it was all getting into compliance because you wiped it all out, but the storms a lot of it.
So
let me check real quick about that thing before I forget. Doug.
And you went with me. Who was it, Logan, that you sent over to show me how to do that? What was that man's name?
Was it Andrew came?
Andrew, yeah.
Tall, bigger guy?
Yeah, you came with me, right, with Andrew to do the road erosion inventory and stuff like that. So I don't know if maybe if you want to go to the Caledonia one and or if it's all over your head, if any of that would make sense to you.
Most of it would be over my head.
Okay, all right. Then I'll hopefully Orleans will
The Orleans County District 9 one will be at the District 9 office. They have a large conference room in their office.
Okay.
So their building's right across the road from basically like McDonald's in Derby.
Yep.
They're right there.
And theirs is April 29th.
Yep.
I'm coming into grievance hearing, grievances season, so I'm... My days are numbered.
And if you find out that one doesn't work for some reason, just shoot me a message and I'll find out where that Washington one is for you.
Okay. Washington is central.
Yeah, so that would be the Montpelier, Berlin, Barry area. It's probably where that
one is. So where's Lamoille? The other side of the state.
Lamoille is like Johnson, Hyde Park, that
side. That's not too bad of a haul, Hyde Park.
Yeah, so I can find out where that one is too if Derby doesn't work. I'm kind of surprised. I think because they made this flyer and they hadn't nailed down exactly where we are hosting each of them, so they just threw out the county names.
Yep. Okay. Memorial's May 27.
Okay. So now I'm going to hop back to codes and standards and go over. So these are yours to keep. So you can have those. And then so. I printed out copies of the 2026 codes and standards and certification, but looks like Aaron has all that printed out anyways. So the differences. So
this is what they signed, right?
Yeah, but they can't because
Keith is
on here.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to go through these here. So if you want to
pop up closer to kind of see exactly what the differences are. I highlighted the kind of the spots between the two that changed between the 19 and the 26. I'll go through them. Stop me if something, you know, if you want more clarification on something that was just kind of always in it. And I'll try to go not too fast. So sections 1 and 2 are the same. They reference the term MRGP instead of referencing the term Act 64. That's just because Act 64 has other elements to it besides MRGP, and really what you're being required to do is per the MRGP program. So it's just a better terminology based on how we discuss it. You know, when we come out there, Grants and Aid, us, Chad, they're not saying, oh, Act 64 requires you to do this. They're always saying MRGP requires you to do this. So it's just kind of updating that language to reference how we're speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another Section 5 added in here. We'll get to that on the next page. Down here, the Vermont Better Roads Manual was updated in 2024 from the 2019 version, so it's just an updated link to reference that manual. That manual's been out now for 2 years, so that's nothing fully new, just updating the reference to it, and that's what you'll see a lot through here, is updating references to stuff that's already changed and you're already kind of using. Okay, so Section 5, so this section is a new Section 5, and then the old Section 5, 6, 7 were bumped down to 6, 7, 8, respectively. So this new section was put in here. So this is the biggest change, and this was actually put in here based off conversation with the towns and kind of stemmed from what towns would like. So in the, you know, in a storm event, as you know, if it's an intermittent stream crossing or a perennial stream crossing, you have that sizing to fall back on and FEMA paying to upsize it. When it was a drainage culvert, you only could upsize it to 18 if it was less than, but if it was already 18 or 24, upsizing it, FEMA wouldn't participate in that cost. So you had to pay that cost difference in those upsizing because there was no state requirement besides a minimum of 18 for drainage. So now we added this stipulation in there, which you can, you know, still say yes or no to, depending. But we hopefully the town see it as a benefit, is that we're saying that if a culvert that is drainage only, so not stream related, washes out or plugs up fully with sediment during a rain event, you shall upsize it 6 to 12 inches to accommodate. That's probably something, John, you're already doing, you know, just as a best management practice. Like, why would you want to put in a culvert that washed out the same size? So especially if that's something you're already doing and you said several yes here, all that helps you with is basically when FEMA comes through and you have that circumstance, then you get the ability to upsize at 6 or 12 in the FEMA event and have FEMA pay for that difference. So we kind of put that in as hopefully a benefit moving forward about something you're already doing, and we're just going to try to capture that money in those events. And then you still fill out your depths of sub-base, gravel sub-base under paved roads and gravel roads, and then your top course like you would before. And you set those, so you can reference your 2019 to see what you set before, or you can set them new, what you'd like to do moving forward. Section 7 didn't change, and then the old 7, which is the new 8, the only difference is the B71 standard. It split about, you know, 6 to 9 months after the 19 outline came out, so that's been pretty much outdated for a while. And now all that is the old standard for standard drawing for residential commercial drives are now split into two separate standard drawings. Nothing changed about them. They just moved them to be easier to view and manage. They used to be kind of squished into one page, and now they're two separate pages. So it's the reference is just referencing the two separate ones, A and B. Okay, so now, so the difference in here, so it's basically this little bit. I kind of just highlighted a little bit of the language change in here. So it's referencing part 6, permits, with this footnote down here about verification, and then this area here that talks about permits. So basically what these are referencing is if you are doing work and it has a stream alteration permit from ANR in play and or has an Army Corps permit in play, and they have requirements in either of those permits to do something that differ from what your codes and standards are require you to do, they supersede your codes and standards. So you should always be following those permits if they're in play to what they say. So it just came up a couple times where it was like, oh, you know, our stream alteration permit saying we have to do this with our culvert. You know, our codes and standards don't say we have to do that, so do we have to do it? When that's in play, that is always a superseding document. You know, that is the bigger document, so that has to be followed, and this one falls second to that.
So that's basically what it's outlining, is that those permits may be in play. You may need to seek those permits and follow what they do. And we were just clarifying. That was always the case. We're just clarifying that, yep, they're
so you're
they're
following
the top dogs.
Who under those circumstances?
So so ANR's stream alteration permit. So if there's a stream alteration permit that you needed from, like, Jarenborg and that group, and they come with you a requirement that they put in play in that permit.
Yeah.
Even if that differs from what your codes and standards say, you have to follow what they're saying.
What
you have
they
to do.
Say, what the ANR.
And then, and then the next blanket up is Army Corps permit. So your federal permit for playing in the stream and stuff, whatever they say supersedes all of us.
Gotcha.
And then this sentence right here, this is something that came into play, and it might come into play with that route, you know, the upgrading of a class 3 to a class 2, how you mentioned how the road was a little bit narrow and you wouldn't be able to get that width. This caveat, and this is kind of how we always manage this, even the 2019, we just didn't have it spelled out, so we put it in there writing so everyone can see it, is that if any implementation of these standards and codes renders the road unsafe, you do not have to follow them. So basically, if you have a road segment that is too narrow, and I've been using that one as actually my example in each town, is if you have a segment that's not meeting that 20-foot or 22-foot width, because there's a slope here and a bank here, and there's an old maple tree, and it's like, oh, you got to cut that maple tree and widen the road out, put some stone there. Well, all you're doing is making that bank more unstable. If it's stable right now with those tree roots and everything, and you go and do something different, you're just causing potential failure down the road. Even though it might exist now, it is currently stable and doing something different until, our view is, until it fails, it is stable at the moment. And doing something, every time you touch something, you always open a can of worms. So even if you put all the stone there and everything, it doesn't mean that it's perfect. And then on this bank, if you were to cut in and try to get out the, put the drainage ditch in, like the codes and standards say or whatever, maybe you're making that shear face a little unstable, and now you're just causing slides to potentially happen. So we're saying, don't do that. Leave it the width. If you haven't had a lot of, you know, high-risk situations there or in unsafe conditions, it is the safest situation in play at the moment, even though it doesn't follow codes and standards. So these exist kind of everywhere, and kind of before, you'd be like, you might call me or bring somebody out and say, you know, we really can't meet the code and standards here. Like, what do we do? And then we just kind of look at it and say, you know what? This is the safest thing. Like, ignore them right here. And this is just basically having that conversation written down. Still kind of the same process. If, you know, if you're unsure, give me a call. I'll come out and I'll confirm with you. Say, yep, no, what you're thinking here makes sense. We don't want to change anything. Or maybe there's middle ground where, oh, we have a room to put a little bit of a ditch in here, but we don't need to widen the road or whatever it be. So it just... Code and standards are always great until they don't work in a situation, and those have to be managed, you know, situation. And then this section here and a couple other spots, it just talks about different stormwater infrastructure. So green infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure practices. So that would be like bioretention ponds are a practice. In the state, we actually have one that's basically like a septic system for water. So there's a lot of water that comes off a hill. It goes into like a septic tank and then leaches out of that septic tank to the river. And that is how it slows down that water, captures it all, and then releases it slower than it flowing fast. So basically, it's it captures a ditch line that comes down. In the 2019 outline, we really only talked about stone line ditches, check dams, turnouts. You know, that was kind of splash pads. That was kind of it. There are a lot of other practices that could be appropriate depending on the area. Probably here in Kirby, you're not going to run into a ton of those because you have the space and everything for those stone lines. These might be a little overkill in some instances, but they do exist. They are, you know, appropriate in some cases, and we do support their use when appropriate. So we basically just started bringing those into the conversation because they're kind of a more used thing in some of the towns. So like the town of Fairley, I've been using an example, like they're pretty flat. It's all kind of level through the town. So they've been doing last couple of years using some downtown improvement money to improve drainage in the village. So they're putting a lot of bioretention ponds in because their water can't get to the Connecticut. It just sits there because it's like the village, and then it's a flat farmer's field, and then it's a river, and this water never gets there. And there's no pitch to even get a ditch line to go there without, you know, ruining a farmer field or something. So it's like putting those bioretention ponds in and having that design is, we just want to say, yeah, we support that. That is a best management practice. So we brought those into the conversation. So they're in here. So there's no confusion on whether, like, oh, well, does that follow codes and standards if we did that? It does, and, you know, if there's another approach out there, you can follow it, and it just, it's...
Just another option.
Yeah, and if it makes sense, it makes sense. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So no new requirement, just expanding on the options that you have.
Right. We can still use this old option, but that's another option we can use.
Correct, and those other ones are still listed in here.
Right.
So all these sections, none of this language changed, so all these turnouts and check dams and everything, that's still listed in here. I wasn't on this committee. I don't really know why they changed some of the font, so you'll notice some of the font got bigger. It kind of just looks funky now. Mm-hmm. All the same language is now just going to kind of be offset because they increased the font size in some spots. Mm-hmm. I almost thought this was easier to read because it was all one size.
Mm-hmm. So these are the difference between signing the 2019
and the 2020.
Right, so this is what's changing when you sign the 2026.
Right.
These sections here, so your municipal culvert section and your driveway culvert section, those are still the same municipal culvert and driveway there.
Yeah.
The differences is in the municipal culvert section, in both sections, there's a new 4 and 5 added. So the old 4 dropped down and became number 6, and these 4 and 5 were added into both sections. And they say the same thing in both of them. And basically, number 4 references intermittent streams shall be sized appropriately and perennial streams shall be sized appropriately. Basically, referring to your stream alteration permit for perennials and appropriate sizing in Appendix B for your intermittent streams. That was always the case. We just didn't have them in this section. It made sense if we're giving you bullets of the things you should be doing in there that we should be listing all the things that you should be referencing. Mm-hmm. So they just added in there. They've always been a part of codes and standards anyways. We just kind of reiterated them in this section.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that makes sense to talk about now that they've kind of made this change is that and we made a little bit of difference in state practice, is that your driveway culverts. Some towns install driveway culverts for their residents. Some towns do not.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my towns do not install driveway culverts, similar to the state, that if you apply for a permit to put a driveway in, and someone comes out, you know, John goes out there and it's a ditch line there, you got to put a culvert in.
Mm-hmm.
So basically one thing to keep in mind, that if that is an intermittent stream or a perennial stream that's going under their driveway, that they have to, that property owner and or the town, if the town does the work, it needs to be sized appropriately.
Correct.
A&R's jurisdiction is over everybody, not just towns and state. So what we didn't fail because it's not a requirement, but in the state we have our permit, and basically we have a section there that says any other permits that apply you need to seek and do. You know, like this mm-hmm. permit is only for the work in the right-of-way and the access to the road. It is not giving you permit or permission for any of the other things that might be in play. Act 250,
mm-hmm.
stream alteration permits, all that stuff, you need to navigate those with those agencies. But in our thing, we do require, like, if there's drainage there, we require a minimum of an 18-inch culvert. So a lot of times we'll say, this requires a minimum of an 18-inch culvert, and we'll put that into our language. So we had, not our district, but another district had one where a resident put in an 18-inch culvert. A&R stopped by at one point, realized that the stream ended up causing some flooding issues because the stream wasn't getting through the spot anymore because it was a new drive. And they're like, your culvert's undersized, this needs to be... It actually needed to be like a 5-foot culvert there. It was like that big of a difference. And the property owner was like, well, the state told me I had to put an 18-inch in. That's what I spent money on. And, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the state stepped in with their CYA and said, we said a minimum of an 18. And if any other permits apply, you need to go find them. You know, so we didn't do anything wrong, but it wasn't a very neighborly thing to do. So, like, now we're trying to, in my office anyways, and I've recommended to other districts, like, we are going to make sure when we're doing permits, if we notice it is intermittent stream or perennial or have the thought that it might be, we might suggest, hey, you should reach out to A&R before you put the culvert in.
Mm-hmm.
We are, you know, spell out, we're going to require a minimum of 18.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it needs to be bigger. Make sure you talk to Jaron Borg before you do something. So I just like to bring that conversation up here because it comes into play where, John, you're out there and there's a culvert there and you're seeing a stream, you know, call Jaron Borg before you buy your culvert and make sure that he's all set with what you're doing. And that could even be if it's outside the right-of-way and you notice the stream crosses their driveway farther down and, you know, they're putting a driveway past that, be like, yeah, before you put something in there, A&R might have a say.
So and before just, we give an application out to a driveway and we see a problem,
we need to mention that to the homeowner?
You don't need to. It is not a requirement.
Okay.
It's just being a neighborly thing, saying, hey, it looks like you're going to fall on that. It just prevents them being like, well, the town told me I only have to do this. You know, because your thing only requires...
I just don't want to be held responsible for me signing the permit for that driveway.
Right. And that's the thing, is you are not responsible for any other permits. Your permit is just for them to work in the right-of-way and have access to the road.
Okay.
And then your permit just requires a minimum of 15. They recommend an 18.
Mm-hmm.
Those are minimum recommendations. A&R's jurisdiction is over yours.
Correct.
So if they require something different, that is them and their permit. That's a requirement, and that property owner still has to follow that.
Okay.
But you're not A&R, so that is not your responsibility to tell them that.
The owner has to go to A&R.
Correct.
And we don't.
But as someone who deals with some of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
you just have that knowledge to say, yeah, that's probably the case here.
Yeah, you might.
You know,
want to
so just being that neighborly saying. You know, and if it's someone who's
mm-hmm.
been a pain in your butt, you don't like them, then don't
right.
tell them. But
12 inches will be fine.
I wouldn't say that. I would just say, I said, you know, I don't know. Minimum 18, maybe it might have to be bigger. That's not our department to say.
Correct.
You know, and you could leave it at that.
Exactly.
Yep. So it's just something where we're just trying to be a little bit better instead of, you know, it never feels good when someone falls in a situation where now they need to spend extra money and your CYA was, it's not our fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you say, you know, it just doesn't feel good either
mm-hmm.
way. So we kind of just started, if we recognize something different, making, you know, we're just our own internal rules to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just bringing that up. That isn't written in here that you have to say that. But some towns do install driveway culverts for their residents, so they are the one who's on the hook for that
Correct.
Sizing in that case. And then this section here, again, it just brings in that mentioning of the green stormwater infrastructure, such as bioretention ponds when appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
The stone check dam section is the same as it was. Now in the new code standards, the class 4 road section is ahead of the stone check dam. First, in the old one, it was stone check dam section and then class 4. So those stayed the same. They just flip-flopped on each other. The diagram did get a little bit smaller, so
mm-hmm.
we increased font size and then made your picture smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And then that brings us to the last section, Appendix B. So this is the active channel sizing. So I will start off saying nothing changed in what you have to do. We're just displaying it differently. And I will say that I kind of fell into this routine, is that this old chart, which is still referenced here because that chart is still accurate and in play, but this chart is a volume sizing chart. So if you have a 40-acre drainage basin that leads to this culvert, then it's requiring that you have a 36-inch culvert. That is really just for the volume of flow. Your intermittent streams may, you know, most likely have an active channel too. So your active channel is like when you're looking at that thing, it's the where the vegetation kind of stops growing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of dirt or small vegetation,
mm-hmm.
and then your more established vegetation. So that's kind of where that line is. And if you measure that a couple spots at the inlet of the culvert up a ways, and you realize that, oh, you know, this is 36 inches wide also. Well, as most people know, we added these two diagrams. So previously ended here. We added two more diagrams, and this font sizing is a little bit bigger, so it goes on the next page. But as you know, a 36-inch wide culvert is 36 inches wide at the center point.
Mm-hmm.
So in a normal instance, when your stream's crossing down here, if your stream channel is 36 inches, it's wider than your culvert. So it's
mm-hmm.
kind of hitting each side, maybe causing
washing
a little bit of
out.
Erosion there. So that is where, like, if you just kind of took column A, column B, and went out and built it, you're not really capturing the whole need of that site in full.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if your active channel is 36 and your volume's 36, you want a 42 or a 48-inch culvert embedded a little bit so you have that that 36 inches wide where the water's crossing, but then you still have 36-inch volume remaining in that culvert for that water to flow. So just that kind of thought process in there. You know, if it's a box culvert, you know, an equal box culvert, then you have that width normally. You know, you have a 4 foot wide by 2 feet tall. You got the volume and your width, so you're good. But the round culverts is where it kind of comes into play. And then a lot of times when you have that erosion here, and it's been a common issue over time,
mm-hmm.
is like when that erosion hits either side, you're perching these culverts, and then water has a harder time getting into it. And then when storms hit, larger rain events,
mm-hmm.
you've already pulled that thread a little bit, so now you're that sub-base of the roadway is just that much more likely to wash out, and that's when you get those situations where the road's gone and your culvert's sitting there all nice and shiny or down a little bit, and but the road's gone. It's just because, and that may still happen on our 200 years.
If this was flat down here and had your wings going out, you wouldn't have to worry about any of that.
Yep, if you have wings directing it in there, if you put little wing walls, that's another way to deal with that.
It's just hard to get this completely compacted in here where you never get that water to go beyond
that. Yep, and sometimes embedding it may be that you set it low and you don't necessarily have to fill it in.
Right.
Sediment will eventually fill it in itself.
Right.
You know, so when I say embedding, doesn't mean you actually have to. I mean,
no one
can really embed a 36-inch culvert. There's no way you're going to get that material perfect throughout it. You let the stream do that over time. You just set it low enough that level spot where you want it to be is set at the right height. The rest of it will happen over the next couple of years.
Right.
But it's just kind of that better discussion, and that's why this was changed into more of a like kind of a flowing thought process versus just two diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a kind of go through this whole thought process when you're sizing your intermittent streams versus this kind of simple chart. So even though we're still using the chart, still using stuff, it just that's one step of the process and not kind of like, oh, go here, all we got to do is do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone did that and they kind of didn't even look down here at this. They kind of just, and I will say I kind of by default did that too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a resetting the learning curve for myself of like, yep, this is what we should be doing. And, you know, these small culverts, you don't think much of, you know, it's not a perennial stream. It's not that big of a deal, but it does matter when these storms hit and it washes out. It's still money out the door. So, yep.
So
that's
the
difference.
So when do you need our signed 2024?
I mean, essentially, I don't need it ever. It is the town's choice to sign them or not sign them. So there's no deadline.
The 2019 for now.
Yep, and that will get the better match for my grant, and then come next year for the grants. You won't get that match unless the 26 is signed.
Okay, so sign 2019 this year, 2020.
Yeah, and then, you'd still get for my grant anyways, you'd still be eligible for the grant, you'd just be down to the bottom match criteria, and then if FEMA events were to happen, they're going to be recognizing 26 standards, not 2019, so basically you would have no codes and standards supporting the rebuild.
So we're actually better off to try to sign this one, I think.
Yeah, and that's why I was kind of explaining the differences. Because
I would rather sign this one now and just be done with it.
And that's why I'm saying by default, really the only actual change is a Section 5. The rest of it is just updating language that was in play.
In the end would make any difference as far as what...
Yeah, and that culvert thing at the end is still something you already, if you circled yes here on your 19, you're already following that, whether you were following it properly or not.
Right.
So.
Yes, I have that.
So those are the difference between the two.
Yeah, because we're going to have to sign that anyway next year.
Yeah.
So you might as well do it now and be done with
it.
My thought is if you already know you're going to adopt them, you might as well adopt them. If there is more discussion to be had, then I just want to give you a wiggle room this year with that 19.
We'll do that at our April 6th meeting.
Yeah.
We'll just sign that.
Yeah, and if you end up signing the 2026 at the April meeting, just send me in that, and don't worry about the 19 sheet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then if, since you do have a missing select board member, if they have questions that I didn't answer or didn't touch base on, just give me a call or an email or something. Even that night, you can give me a shout. If I'm available, I answer my phone. If I'm busy, I don't. So that's kind of how I never get mad where I'm like, oh, why are they calling me at this time? If I'm busy, I don't answer. If I'm sitting there not doing anything, I don't mind answering the phone.
Okay.
Because usually towns aren't calling because they want to chit-chat for 2 hours about nothing. So.
Yeah.
All right, so the only thing left in my agenda here is just go through the financial plan and fill this out. So I open the floor to other questions if you have them, and I'll just kind of be going through this as we talk. And if there's nothing else, I'll just kind of go through this. And then once I kind of have this filled out, I always like to just kind of reiterate what I do when I'm doing this. But. And your fiscal year goes from
January to
January and December. I was thinking I had a lot more towns that followed our fiscal year, and this year I've been paying more attention to it, and I think I only have two out of all my towns. And I actually have one village and one town that follow a totally different one.
Really?
Wells Rivers goes from April like May 1st to April 30th is their fiscal year, and another town does June 1st to May 31st. Why, I don't know, but those kind of make sense when you have like one thing I always kind of find silly is like the January to December is you're approving a budget that you're already in 2 months at least when you're talking about it. So you're approving a budget that's already 2 months old, and then also your income for that budget
income that we won't have until, like,
until the end
July
of the end of the
November.
End of the year is when you're getting the income to support the budget you passed.
Yeah.
So it does always kind of seem silly that that's how it goes, but that's I think 90% of towns in the state, that is how they do it, you know. So it's not uncommon. It's just kind of a funny way.
If we run out of money, we just go get a loan.
Sure.
Again.
So is this revenue section, is this all or just highway? So like estimated zoning permits, does that go to the highway department?
Okay. I don't know if there's...
So surplus is highway. Are
yep,
any of these,
highway.
Is hold harmless or pilot highway?
Nope.
Okay, so maybe it's just this one then. Surplus and then our state aid.
And state aid, yes.
And then your Class 2 roadways, you have 4.01 miles of Class 2 roadway at a state aid rate of 47.86.19. Mm-hmm. So your state aid for your Class 2 roadway comes in at $19,192.62. And your Class 3 is 20.17 miles, and I pull these mileage from your mileage certificate that you certify each February. So those that comes in at a 17.83 and 19 cent rate, and that provides you with $35,966.94. And when you add those together and divide by four, your roughly quarterly payments are $13,790-ish. So that's what you'll see like January, April, July, and October for those payments. They should all come at their normal times this year. I know in the past the secretary and governor had swapped and did some pay extra, which didn't help anybody that didn't follow the state fiscal year. Just kind of made things complicated. And then again, these rates here do change quarterly. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. I've only seen them go down once in my history of dealing with this since 2019. They've gone down once that I've noticed. A lot of times they go up and sometimes they just stay the same. So when I do these financial analysis plans, it is based on the state's third quarter posting of those rates. Those rates are public. You can log into Google and type in Vermont AOT town highway rates, and there'll be a link right there to the current rates. And they do go up and down, so you might see those quarterly payments fluctuate a little bit.
Thank you.
So I just go through and I pull out stuff that is like a general expense versus like a specifically winter or summer, and then also pull out anything that is a major project. The form used to be a little bit different, just as major construction projects now, but things that fall under that category that I still put in there, like your appropriation. So the appropriation that you put towards your equipment fund, I pull that out because that is not something that is a cost that is being put on the roadway as your, you know, your annual maintenance budget. That is like a save for future use thing. So anything that is like a loan payment on a piece of equipment, purchase of a piece of equipment, or a capital fund for whether it is even projects or equipment or whatnot, those get pulled out, so they're not reflected in your annual non-winter maintenance budget.
But we don't get any credit for the truck we bought last year.
No, I pull it out because your non-winter maintenance budget there, 10% of that is the threshold for the Town Highway Emergency Grant. So that is the threshold where you need, if you had an event happen in town that wasn't declared, if it was over that threshold of that 10%, then you could qualify to apply, be eligible to apply for the Town Highway Emergency Grant. And if approved, we'd step in and help. If it's below that 10%, then it's viewed as your budget can take that hit and not be affected dramatically. If it's over that, then it's, you know, a detriment to the budget to have to pay this extra cost. So that's where it falls, and that's why I want to make sure that I pull out anything that's not really maintenance, yearly maintenance, so that number's lower, therefore your threshold's lower, and be more accurate to like what your actual operating budget is for non-winter stuff. So that's why I pull the stuff out of that. I pull out garage expenses like heating the building, electric supplies for the garage itself. That's a building. It's not a roadway. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I don't count it as road maintenance. Mm-hmm. And then I also pull out your Class 4 because a Town Highway Emergency Grant can't be used on a Class 4 roadway. Also, State Aid isn't Class 4, so I pull that out to the side just to... Later, when I do my check, I can just determine that you're spending the appropriate amount per the statute, and that's not including Class 4 roads because we still have the thing of, like, you're not supposed to spend money in Class 4 roads, but before, we'd always be like, oh, we don't like to see that. It's harder to say now because MRGP does require you to do work on your Class 4 roads, but the state aid payments are only meant for Class 2 and 3, so I kind of just list it separately so I can kind of see those numbers make sense without it. But it's in there because you are required to do work on some of them years now because of MRGP. But. So I just kind of list that as like a special project. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, when you do work on MRGP stuff, a lot of times it might be grant-related work. It's a project and stuff, so... that grant type stuff gets pulled out anyway, so it kind of makes sense to keep that going.
What about these towns that are going out and buying machines to do all their roadside mowing? Is there any grant funding for any of that?
Not specifically that I have. Some towns are doing the thing where because of the opportunity for like your grants and aid payment grants and your better roads grants, they like, oh, we were doing this work, but now we can get this grant to qualify for it. So they use that money there and what they would have spent on that road, they put into like an equipment fund. There's a couple things. There are outside of the state, legislative, community, federal grants that for all kinds of things. So you may qualify for some random grant that helps buy you a piece of equipment that like I don't even know about, but a grant writer might be able to find. Mm-hmm. There's always grants that come and go on a federal level, or you know, the AOA's office or the, you know, Commerce office. Like there might be other just random grants that have something to do with that. The state does do a in the Orange Book it references it, but a loan equipment loan program. So basically we will loan you money out of your state aid ahead of time to purchase a piece of equipment, and then it pays, we basically garnish your state aid to pay it back. I have no idea what the interest rate is on that, if there is one, if there isn't, that I actually don't know. So I don't want to say anything
about that.
But
that's paid back by the state taking it out of the quarterly.
Correct. So you're just basically barring against future payments to the town.
Right. Right.
Yep. It's not that simple, but that's basically what that is doing. And I do know it's either a low interest rate and or no interest rate. It's a better opportunity than just going to a bank and getting a loan. I just don't remember if it's actually yes or no whether there's interest, so I don't want to speak too much on it.
Yeah.
But I know that it's a benefit to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I take everything that I put as a general. As you know, way back, Shauna went through and found your kind of town split for winter, summer costs. You've had a 50-50 split, which is most towns have that, where it's kind of 50 winter, 50 summer for costs. So I take everything that's kind of generalized, not specifically one or the other, and I put it into this category and split it. So I'll add up those totals here. Split that in half because it's 50-50, and I bring one down the summer side, and then on the summer side I add back in the stuff that was specifically summer, the MRGP fee, and then your summer roads category here. So your summer budget is $210,900. So that's what goes in your non-winter. I'll talk about that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And your winter side is 74,900 plus your winter cost of 85,000 is 159,900. And I add these up just to make sure I didn't have any errors in my math. $396,800. So your overall budget, $396,800. Bring that here, and I bring that up to the top for revenue. And then I minus out the state aid that we calculated earlier. And then your carryover from last year. And that leaves $283,148.84 is what's contributed to your highway budget from town race taxes. And if I take that, I'm going to also subtract out the $3,500 that was class 4. And then I will divide that by your overall mileage for 2s and 3s. So your 4.01 plus your 20.17. And that leaves $11,565,000 per mile. State statute 19, section 307 requires $300 to be spent per mile, so you're well above 300. I think the lowest one I've seen this year is 7,000 something. Really hasn't been an issue since like the late 90s, early 2000s, where that was a bigger conversation with towns. There is a town actually that gets a hold harmless payment from the state, and they direct that to their highway budget, so they're actually overspent in their highway budget, so then they have a line specifically in their budget for $6,000 to cover that $300 required. So they say, we take $6,000 from our taxes, put it on the highway, and then they basically, whatever's left over at the end of the year from like that hold harmless. So their budget, when I do theirs, it's always mix-match, so their income is always way higher than their expenses, and that remaining at the end of the year is put into appropriations and, you know, capital equipment funds, project funds. So they kind of hit that statutory limit as like a asterisk in their budget. just to check the box. And then your non-winter maintenance budget was $210,900, which means $21,090 would be that threshold of damage. So any event, and it has to be a man-made or natural event that does it, but it can't be due to like a lack of maintenance. So if a bridge falls in, that was, you know, you have inspections and bridge where it's been out of condition, you've been meaning to do something and then it caved in, that wouldn't be eligible. But if it is in fair and decent shape and gets washed out, example of like Corinth used one the other year for a beaver dam that broke out and took a culvert out. So that was used there to put the culvert back. Town of Walden also used one in 2024 in June when there was a FEMA event declared for Washington County and was not declared for Caledonia County because Walden had one road that was hit. Nothing else in the whole county was hit, just that one road, and it was just the first half a mile in from Cabot, who had all kinds of damage. It was the Cabot Road. But since they were across the county line, they had to meet their own threshold county-wise. FEMA wouldn't do an exemption to add them into the Washington County, they had enough damage, but they missed the Caledonia threshold by $4,000. They were short, and they wouldn't do an exemption to count it. So the state stepped in and used the emergency grant program to pay for their damages in that case. Mm-hmm. So it definitely has its place, and it kind of falls in line kind of between that threshold and kind of a $500,000 range, just because it is only $1.5 million that gets put in there annually. It holds that money, so if it's not used, it kind of keeps growing. Last few years, it's been used a little bit more throughout the state. That pot split for every town. So as more towns need it for assistance, then, you know, so the last couple of years, we've drained it pretty much. So that's why we have a little more decision based off if your damage is, you know, $500,000 or more. If it's a big chunk, then we look at, are there any other options to help fund this versus this thing? We try to keep that for smaller events and everything. That's why, like, it wasn't used for any of the 25 storm that wasn't declared, because it was about just shy of $2 million total that was there, and that was, you know, that's over a full year's allotment for that program, so basically it wasn't appropriate to use that on it,
right.
Even though that's the case, that's the perfect example of when it should be used. So we try not to make sure a town doesn't use up all of it. And
nobody else has any.
Right, so. But it is kind of still a first-come, first-served basis for that program. So if you apply for something and there is no money in the program, I might just not have anything for you. It doesn't mean that maybe we couldn't, if we're close to that line, that we couldn't delay something and try to capture the next allotment after July 1st. So that is everything in your budget. A quick audit of the budget. Doesn't look like there's anything outstanding there that isn't highway-related. I don't see any, you know, cattle, beef cattle, the farm operations in there, so should be good.
You hid that well, Mike.
Yeah, he just put it under the general highway maintenance, resurfacing, construction line. Yep, I will type this up and send it back to Aaron, so it's a lot neater. And that's all I've got for my agenda today. So is there anything else, town issues, anything else come up that over the year, or any other complaints you want me to forward on to somebody?
I don't believe so. Not to my knowledge. I think we're just going through each act of our FEMA stuff and getting that ready to roll.
Yep. How's that going?
You guys are
still doing pretty well up there. You still have, I know FEMA kind of disappeared for a minute, so you may have lost your point of contact, but I think BEM's stepped in and kind of been helping from their side. So hopefully you still have someone answering emails.
Sort of.
That would be a Keith question.
He says FEMA's on furlough. I know I have been contacted by DPS, but it was kind of like to get everything audit-wise ready for our submission for the first storm. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we really hear from DPS until everything is finalized. But we have bids coming in on Monday
for
the last four projects.
Yeah. But I'd still reach out to Kim, DPS, just for those questions about maybe you can get any early release or pushing out deadlines if the town needs a little more time.
There's no way Keith Booster wouldn't have already asked her that, right?
I don't know.
And sometimes you might not realize it's an option.
Right.
Well, he was going to. Okay, so you must need a bid. You need a cost estimate before you can get that, right? Because I think he
Yeah, it needs to be based off of, yeah, so if you're bidding construction, bidding engineering, then it
we
might
do
be
have
until
engineering,
engineering
costs, and he was going to send those in, must be for this early release, but since we were getting the bids on Monday anyway, and mm-hmm. FEMA's currently on furlough, I told him he may as well wait because we don't want to end up stuck paying extra costs if the bids don't come in at that. So.
Yep. Yeah. So it's if the bids come in and then support that cost estimate or something, then that would be more solidified money, you know, solidified kind of end of day project cost, and then that might be the step of when those get released.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know I do have a town that's in a pickle where they're like, oh well, our treasurer told us we could spend that money. I was like, well, I don't know where they got that from, but you shouldn't have spent that money. And now we're figuring out exactly what they should be reimbursed, and then the discrepancy between that and what they were what dropped into their bank account.
I feel like Nate Seacard told us something about that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, yeah, so I said, oh, you might need the budget a little chunk to send back to FEMA. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not free money from the feds.
No, right. Nothing's free.
Yeah, so, and I said they will ask for it back. But we'll manage that as it goes. Right now it's on pause, so we have a little wiggle room to kind of figure it out internally between us and VEM and be at least prepared for that conversation moving forward.
Eventually.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's all going to work out. And the only other thing would be, are you doing any spring road posting? I know we're kind of already into some soft roads. All right. Our roads have been holding up pretty good this year.
Yeah,
we've had already seen a lot of towns have been able to go do some grading this year already, so
mm-hmm.
that's nice because we had what, 2 years in a row of like six mud seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see a break.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So yeah, so that's all I got.
Perfect. I think we're good then.
Okay.
All right, I can tell.
We'll get out of your hair, and then you can let the criticism fall.
Sure. All right, boss. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
And like always, if anything comes up we didn't talk about, or you think about something, or have more questions, give me a call.
Okay.
I try to be around as much as I can be.
Okay.
I know. I was going to shake your hand.
No, it's
fine. John's done.
Good seeing you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Logan.
You're welcome. If you have any more questions about like that culvert stuff and or Doug's kind of being a little elusive, let me know.
Yeah.
Hopefully
or I can reach out to Rita. You said Rita's real.
So yeah, Rita's Doug's counterpart. So she may answer the phone and just kind of say, oh, you should really bring this up with Doug.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not her territory. You're Doug's territory.
Okay.
But she'd probably answer any simple questions.
Okay.
She's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully when Doug might be looking at retirement soon and slowing down, so
mm-hmm.
hopefully whoever replaces him is proactive.
Okay. All right.
But I haven't heard anything about retirement. So
thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Logan.
You're welcome.
Did you want this about the Mud Hollow Bridge?
Do I want that?
Were you
that?
Interested in keeping that?
Yeah, I guess we can.
Or did you want John to hold on to that? I don't really know. I don't think there's any reason for me to.
Right. This isn't the way I understood it. This is just something that we need to look at and go from there, or what?
That is their latest report from when they were there. He said in October of
2024. Right.
And so he gave me, they're going to inspect it again this summer, and I'll go in and check what it is. I don't know if I'm going to get something similar to that, an updated one. I'm not quite sure. I've never been on that site before.
Some of this has
December
been changed.
Isn't it? They said they'd
be by the time they'd have it
finalizing
put together.
It,
yeah.
Putting it out. So.
Right.
I mean, I can hold it and put it in with my stuff. But
why don't you do that, and then if you and I got to go on a road trip just to check it out,
okay.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Map update, Marilyn.
Okay, so I got a hold of another mapping company, and her pricing came down quite a bit. Her total cost is $5,000 $40. Which, and I talked with her, and everything she said just made sense to me, and I would like to have you guys sign a contract with her, but it's a real simple contract. If you guys could just, I mean, Aaron, I had Aaron read it. I said, does something not sound right to you? Am I missing something?
So the $1,680 is going to be a recurring yearly fee to keep them updated.
2027 updates, 2028 updates, and it doesn't go any farther.
So for the 1680, we're in 2026. So when I turn the grand list over for 2026 in June, she asked me. She said, "That's what you want me to go by," because she goes by the grand list, and that's what she's referring to. Going forward,
CPI will be made in accordance with the following schedule.
Yeah.
Seems cut and dry, $1,580 a year. So the $5,000 is just the upfront for this year to establish.
And that I don't know. I mean, if we only have, do you want me to still ask her that question? If we only have a couple updates to do each year,
The other people were going to charge us $700 and something a year, right?
Right.
But the upfront cost was.
One of them was $10,000. One was $15,000.
Yeah.
But they were saying every year going forward it would only be a fraction of that. Do you want me to ask her that? Because
cost more than $1,680 a year.
Because it's not.
I don't feel like that's a huge.
Okay.
Deal.
What's 1680 times 3?
So that's an annual cost for any updates that are necessary.
That's what Aaron's asking me. That's the updated one. So right now she is doing. It's in here somewhere, right? How many parcels I'm having her update? 30 something parcels.
I didn't see that.
What is 1680 times 3? Right, that's what she's charging, $5,040. So I'm assuming that she's just breaking this cost here down here. Is that what she's doing? Because she.
But that's only supposed to go up to 2026 for that first $5,040. Yeah.
Yep.
1680 in cost.
She's making. She's making all corrections. She's taking the changes that I'm giving her.
Right.
Up to 2026, and that's where that $5,040 is coming from. It's the corrections and the updates.
Startup costs, so to speak. And then
1680. Right. So is number one already paid out of this cost?
So that I am assuming will come from that $5,040.
Right. And then it's another $1,680 for the following year.
Following 2 years. Each year.
Well, yeah, I got that.
Right,
27
right.
and 28.
So that's any updates and then processing and.
And I was thinking that I didn't actually have that conversation with her. That it's not going to be, it's not, you know, the 32 that she's fixing now has to do with the prior 10 years. Mm-hmm. Going forward, it's only going to be. It's only going to be a couple each year going forward.
Mike's point on the clarification is that Section 1 payment, 1680 upon completion and delivery of products for 2026, in addition to 5,040.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand the 3250 and everything to create stuff, yeah. update stuff, so
well,
on
that's,
and so forth.
Well, that's why, you know, if you guys can tell me the questions to ask her, because I don't... You're reading what I'm reading. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not understanding. And I had her after meeting with her and stuff. And I said, if you can write me out a contract, because I wanted her to type it out a little more specific, mm-hmm. so that I can present it to you guys and see.
I mean, to
so
me,
that would be the question. Is
that would be the only question I would have? What Mike brought up as far as, you know. 2027, 1680, 2028, 1680, cut and dry. That's the fee for the services over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And just because if we over 5,040 plus 1680.
Right. I don't know if the 1680 on one is part of the 540.
Right.
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 Okay.
Right. Other than that. Gift towards
yeah,
the mouth.
unless she's referring, see up above of that it says property lines as of 4/1/2026, and then unless she's referring to this 26 as going forward from
right.
from April 2nd 2026 to April 2nd 2027, if that's what she's referring to as 2026. And 2027 and 2028 is after that April 1st date. Okay, so let me ask her that question.
Right.
And that's the only question you can
that's
think of?
That's the only thing
okay.
I have.
Right.
Right.
It says, you know, if we terminate the contract, either party can cancel the contract by giving 10 days notice. It doesn't sound like there's any penalty to it.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, by the sounds, just two and three down here, just the cost for the next 2 years to update.
Yeah.
Anything that's changed, I believe, updates in town view on my description.
Do we want an answer to that question about the 1680 before we sign anything?
Yep. Yes. Yep. And, okay. Keith, and Keith isn't here anyway. So
okay, I
understand. Keith.
Oh. I think the 5,040 brings us up to 2026, but then 1684 2026. 1680 for 2027, 1680 for 2020.
Yeah, and what her and I talked about is because the 2026 grand list is as of April 1st.
Right.
And then it goes, then you have the whole other month of 2026 that will go to April 1st of 2027.
Yeah.
Is that what she's referring to as 2026? Is from April 2nd? 2026 to April 2nd of 2027, and then the 2027 cost, she's going from April 2nd to 2027
right.
to April 2nd of 2028. You know, it's
how
the grand list plays. It's
yeah.
a little.
I mean, if we had that answer, possibly by the next meeting on Monday.
And you have a meeting on Monday.
Signed on. Whatever.
Okay.
So
I'll send her an email. I'll ask her. I'll say, you know, we had a brief meeting mm-hmm. today. These are their questions.
Mm-hmm.
They have another meeting on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get me an answer to those questions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And you do or don't consider this what you'd like to see for a contract type thing for us to sign? Or
yeah, there's a page. This is what she sent me for the contract.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yep. So it says contract for services buy in between the town of Kirby and
yeah, on that last page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So I guess okay. if there wanted to be a clarification or something in writing or whatever between that 2026-1680 and that, then that might want to be
yep.
modified.
And
I
you know, I'll say,
yeah.
you know, we didn't discuss going farther with the project, but you know, going forward, our town clerk predicts we only have about 2 surveys per year, and that this cost for
$1,680,
if that.
I mean, I wouldn't have
changed
ideas. It's reasonable or not.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue. Yeah. Yeah, by the sound, once she gets it updated, it's going to be a cost of $1,680 to keep it updated for 2728.
Yeah. Additions and corrections to it, then.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's necessarily. I mean, if she's provide PDF copies of tax maps, we won't.
There's a change in every year.
We don't need to have the PDF copies updated every year. So if we're looking at just correcting them for the GIS, and it's $3,250 for 32, say there's 32 that she's doing for me, then to do 2, it should only be
right.
It should be less than $1,680, I would think.
It also said something about online access.
Yeah, so what
for you or for like residents?
No, so what she does is when she's doing this, she's sending it to the state for the online GSI parcel viewer type of thing.
Yeah. Right.
And so she asked me, she said most towns don't have paper copies in their office anymore. They're just using that online service. Mm-hmm. And I asked you.
I prefer the online.
And yeah, I asked you if people still come in and use those paper copies or not.
Occasionally, but yeah, I tell everyone about.
So that's why that that PDF copy of tax maps, that $1,790, that's so that I have something to print out to put in your office.
Okay.
If you want to do away with that, if you only want to do online, we
I
could
mean,
probably.
I mean, as long as the maps on Parcel Viewer were actually updated every year, I think we could do just online.
Okay.
If other offices aren't keeping them.
Is that another thing? Is that another thing you want me to ask her? I can say, you know, we had that discussion with the board and everything. They're thinking maybe we don't want paper copies in the office. Do you want me to ask her that as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to get
theoretically, if you had one, you could copy.
Well, that's what.
Different maps.
I don't.
The last time, there's a series of seven maps or something like that. But when I was doing this way back in 2019, that's what they were trying to explain to me, is that the goal of it is to have everything online so you don't need the paper copies. Mm-hmm. They can go on the computer, they can bring up the parcel, and they can take a snippet of it and print it out themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that was one of her questions to me as well. She says that most of the towns I work in, she says, they don't have paper copies in their office.
They're just online and look at
They're just looking at it online. And so
I'm
kind
of surprised we don't have to have a paper copy.
Yeah.
If other towns don't, then.
Yeah. And so I had asked Aaron about that, if many people come in to still use that, because I haven't really been here much since COVID. And a lot of people you know, handy with using online searches.
That was my next question. I didn't know if we were responsible to have a copy here, but apparently not.
I mean, if other towns, these are Vermont towns, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if other towns aren't doing it, then
must be,
it's not.
Yeah.
What do you go online to?
Vermont Parcel Viewer.
Vermont Parcel Viewers?
Yeah. Or you can go, there's an ANR. If you type in ANR, there's a way to get the maps.
Yeah.
But right now, they're not all updated. So, like, if someone did a subdivision of
They're supposed to.
Or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Might not be on there.
I know the hunting apps. If you use the hunting apps, they're all the same. They're all getting the same information from the same source.
Same date. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
But
okay.
the owner of a property would have changed because of the PTTR, right?
Well, that's the other thing. That cost is the way that it is. It's not just putting subdivisions in. She's taking the grand list with all the name transfers as well. That might be what it is.
Putting that all in correct information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe just don't make it sound like you think her price is way, way out there, because I think that this is our most hopeful one so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. because that's a good point as well. Because I know, because my son uses the
Onyx
a lot, and he says, "Well, it says here that so and so owns that," and I'm saying, "Yeah, but it's sold."
Right.
And so that might be what she's referring to, is because she's the one. I actually liked it because she says, "Well, can you send me a copy of your grand list?" Which is something that the other companies didn't ask me for. So she's taken the grand list with all the correct names and our information.
And putting it on that.
Yeah, and so that's probably why.
Right.
If she's going to have me send it to her every year with the new names, the new transfers, and then she's going to do that.
Those clarifications.
Yep.
If possible by Monday, that'd be great.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you guys, because I didn't know what to make of it. So your input helps. So I will, when I hear back from her, I'll send something to Aaron. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all I had.
So, do we have something that we can sign on Monday, or do you think she might want to reflecting our question.
Yeah, I'll have her resend something, and if we don't need the paper copies, if she can take that out, and whatever information I find, I'll forward to Aaron. I copy you on most of my conversations. I don't know if she copies back her responses to you or not. But I'll make sure Aaron has it.
She won't know anything per se until Monday.
If she does make changes to the, either bring a copy or send it to me.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Be great.
Thank you, Marla.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. LEMP update.
That's the local emergency management plan. We adopt it every year. Keith Wooster has it already, but I need
Right.
Eichem's signature, and he's not here.
So we'll do that Monday.
Monday also.
Okay. Next monthly select board meeting is scheduled for Monday, April 6th at 6 p.m. I vote we adjourn.
Second.
Seconded.
All those in favor, 2-0.
Aye.